Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps. My name's Kerry Stevenson. Today, we're diving deep into NFTs, and that is not some weird fungal thing that I'm talking about, ladies and gentlemen. This is something in technology. I am learning all the time, and I'm telling you, by the end of this conversation, you guys will be jumping out of your seats excited. Please welcome to the program Yap Siu. He's the chairman and co-founder of Animoca Brands. Now, who are Animoca Brands? Really, they are involved in blockchain and gamification. We'll get into that. And you'll understand by the end of this conversation why this is a very exciting area, because we're going to be talking about non-fungible tokens, also known as NFTs. Yap, great to see you. Welcome to Small Caps.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a fascinating area that you're in, and it's an area that many people don't understand. But before we get started into Animoca Brands, let's do a little bit about Yap Siu and who you are and sure. What you've been doing, what brought you into this Animoca Brands and what you're doing today.
Well, I mean, first, I think we've had a bit of a history personally, as well as a firm, to constantly dabble with technologies in the early days. I started one of Hong Kong's first internet service providers in 93 in Hong Kong, called Hong Kong Online, right? And back then there were only literally like hundreds of, actually tens of thousands of people that wanted internet. So it was maybe a little bit too early, but I learned a lot about that space. And frankly, there's a lot of parallels between sort of the innovator stage and then the early adopter stage. And that really became sort of a strong philosophy for us, where we always wanted to try to be in the technology areas that were in the moment where it would become early adopter, because those were breakthrough moments which had real sort of impact. We sort of did that later on with Outblaze in 98, where we started building what back then was called application service providers, but ultimately became cloud computing. This was in 98, and we sold that business to IBM and became part of Lotus Notes to be part of their sort of email cloud computing service. We were one of the largest open source developers, and also one of the biggest email deployments globally. And because of a non-compete with IBM in the enterprise area for 3 years, we delved straight back actually to something I had originally been working on, which was in games, because actually my first job was with Atari in the 80s. Basically went into mobile games, because we looked at the smartphone, at the iPhone, and said, you know, that seems like a pretty disruptive device and it completely changed the way we live. I mean, people, you know, forget that the App Store really only launched a little over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And now, you know, it's a $1 trillion economy, right? But we, you know, back then we just didn't think about it that way. But we saw that and went really big into mobile games in 2010. And we're one of the larger mobile game companies in 2011, 2012. And similarly, now we see what happened with blockchain 3-4 years ago, and particularly in the space of NFTs. And we're seeing the similar growth trends, and we think it's early adopter. And so we went headlong into that space, hoping we're right.
So the blockchain, it is still very young, as you just said, and you've mentioned non-fungible tokens. Is that what Animoca Brands' main focus is? Because I introduced you really as blockchain and gamification. But the use of that by non-fungible tokens. Now, can you explain to people like me of a certain generation that go, a what? What is a non-fungible token?
Well, to put briefly, right, the same technology that allowed for something like Bitcoin or Ethereum, which is to give you immutable ownership of a digital token, whether the value is $1 or $10 or, you know, $50,000, that's kind of secondary. What is more important is the fact that you own this token, and you don't need an intermediary to sort of tell you what the value that you actually own it. So one of the things that the internet did, which was amazing, is it created this free available access of content and became this giant photocopier of everything, basically. And it completely sort of liberalized and sort of amateurized effectively knowledge, right? So It used to be that we were treating with knowledge in specific silos, and that gave us an advantage. Oh, I knew something that you didn't know, and I could trade upon that knowledge. That was our arbitrage pre-internet, right? When the internet came about, knowledge was broadly available, and we had to basically develop applications on top of it and how to deal with it. But one of the losers in this space ended up becoming the content space, because content was duplicated rapidly, right? And so we saw this happen effectively, what we think of as this sort of erosion of the creative industry, because artists and creators ended up losing out and having to work with these giant systems, like, where, you know, sort of this centralized system, whether this is the App Store or this is Spotify or this is Netflix, and having to route sort of content discovery through that channel. And this was
sorry to interrupt you, but you're absolutely right. I mean, I've got friends that are creatives, that are musicians, and they say to me, we can't make money in the internet space anymore because we literally get pennies. So they're not able to make an income from this anymore. So are you saying that this is going to help to level the playing field?
So, absolutely. So let me quickly finish off on sort of what non-fungible tokens does. So that same technology that proves the ownership of a fungible token, in this case being a Bitcoin or Ethereum, can be used to validate a non-fungible asset, which in simple terms means something scarce, something unique. Now, when you think of the real world, the way that we live, everything we touch ultimately has an element of scarcity. We may not think of it that way, but it ends up being that way because the journey that each asset takes is individual. You know, I can go to IKEA and I can buy some cups, right? And the cup is a simple utility. I drink from it and it may not be very valuable. But the moment I buy the cup, it has a different journey than you buying that same cup, because I have different people use it, I may drink different things out of it, and maybe in both cases it's not worth a lot. But what if Taylor Swift owned that cup? Is it worth more, right? What if this was a cup that was handed down for three generations from my great-grandmother and, you know, went through wars and periods, whatever it is, right? Even though it's a simple cup, that history, that provenance of its journey has value. We do this all the time. When you think about wedding rings as well, you know, the silver in which it is minted is not very valuable in and of itself, but the memory attached to that, particularly as it goes down generations, becomes priceless, but maybe only to a small group of people. Now, this is something you can now do digitally with non-fungible tokens. Every single asset that is minted digitally and can now have the scarce journey. Now, why this is exciting is because a lot of us play video games, for instance, and we don't actually own any of these assets. But if it was possible for me to own sort of my memories of the games I played, the assets I owned, you know, maybe that sword I had 50 kills with, or those games I played together with my kids, all these assets, if I could own them, there's a memory attached to that. And many interesting things could develop from that, but I actually truly owned it. That's what non-fungible tokens do. That is that technology that allows that. Now, speaking of the creators, what that also means is, because it's blockchain, everything is recorded, which means that artists and creators can get a cut of secondary and tertiary transactions. And this is one of the things that's happening with art a lot. You know, right now, Christie's is auctioning a NFT art by Beeple. And he just sold a piece of art in the secondary market for $6.6 million, an entirely crypto digital art. Right?
Wow.
And the thing, though, what's different here is that as the art resells, the original artist, in this case Beeple, takes a cut. Now imagine what it would do for creators if every time a secondary piece of their work is resold, either them or their estate receive a benefit for it. That doesn't happen, right? So this is very, very powerful, because they actually end up, many artists in the crypto world end up making more money from the secondary and aftermarket sales than from their primary sales. In fact, there's examples where people just give out the art and then, you know, the community trades them and they make more money that way. So it completely changes the way that we can think about sort of digital assets, because we truly own them. And non-fungible tokens, I think what happens with non-fungible tokens is that they deliver what we describe as property rights in the digital world. One of the problems we have right now in the digital world is, you know, we don't have property rights. We live in a digital world more and more. In fact, one may argue that we perhaps live more digitally than we live physically. Certainly sort of during COVID. And the problem we have is that we spend all this time digitally putting money into our digital assets, like when we play games, but actually who gets the benefit? The game companies do, the studios do, right? They take all the money, right? They take
Unlike Facebook,
Facebook is a good example as well, in a different context, right? All the time that you spend as an individual, for instance, contributing your social network and your social graph, Facebook gets all that data. And you don't get anything for it, per se, right, as an end user. And in fact, in Australia, there is that very fight that's going on right now in terms of, the whole sort of news outlets. Well, news companies are content producers, right? And they're delivering content. And are they getting fairly compensated for the fact that the content is being distributed in other platforms that are very powerful, such as Facebook and Google? And are they being paid for? Now, in the case of Google, I understand that they have agreed on payment, but Facebook has not, right? And Facebook's perspective is,
I thought they had come up with something, but I could be wrong.
Well, sure. So maybe something happened recently, but certainly the narrative at the time was that Facebook was saying, fine, we'll just cut up, Australian news sources and take it from there. And that is the tyranny of centralization. When you have a central organization that has sort of too much power, it can control everything, right? And what that does here now with blockchain and why people are so fascinated about this is it's decentralized. There is no central control. You can't stop me. I don't have to agree with you, but I can trade or transact or move it wherever I want. And with non-fungible tokens, it's the same for digital assets, that ownership, right? And that time that you spend sort of developing these non-fungible tokens is something that you can trade and sell with whomever you like. The other way to look at non-fungible tokens is like open digital assets. We think of non-fungible tokens in the same way as what open source did to code. We think that open digital assets will do to assets in general. In the real world, I can buy a car and I can paint it and I can decorate it. I can change the seats to leather or Velcro and I can sell it for more money or whichever, just to customize for my own pleasure. I can't do that with a digital item. I can't take an asset from Fortnite and decorate it. I can't change it or pass it on to another user for more value. I can't do any of that, right? And that's the problem, because the game companies themselves control that ecosystem. You have to experience it in entirely the way they want you to, right? And while they may be well-intentioned in doing so, it is another form of tyranny. It is another form of total control. Now, the real world doesn't work that way, right? We're all different. We all want to do different things. We have different ideas, right? If you think about I remember back when YouTube was starting, many of my media friends were just like, this is going to die. Who's going to watch something that some kid is making without all the production effort? Who's dying right now, right? But and that's because we don't have one taste, right? Human beings are not machines that only like one thing or another. Although that is what, again, centralized content does. Because, if you look at Spotify, your music choices seem to be more limiting, despite the fact that there's probably more music available out there, because you're getting an algorithm that is sort of trying to box you into a category of this is the kind of music you like, right? Because 50,000 other people that seem similar to you might like this. But a small artist has absolutely no chance of being discovered. Just over the weekend, Three Lao, a DJ, he sold NFT music he generated over $11 million of sales through that process.
How much?
$11 million.
Now, let me just stop you for a second because, if we step back from non-fungible tokens, because I want to know where they came from, because here's somebody who's created music and in the past, maybe he would use Spotify and he would get a tiny amount.
Yeah.
How does it work with NFT? Because it's not on a Spotify platform. I'm just trying to...
So the distribution of the music may still be on Spotify for listening, but the ownership of that track perhaps, or whether this is an ownership in royalties, or in this case, just the provenance of ownership or the fact that you can own a piece of that original. One way to look at it from an art perspective is, the original Mona Lisa is priceless, right? It's worth an inordinate amount of money. But there's still prints out there, right? And copies out there. these are not worth that much, but you can still own them and they can charge a small amount of fee for them. The original creator in this circumstances would still receive a small fee for that. But the original, the first version of it, as it were, is the priceless piece, right? And that's also how the collector market works as well. So there is a premium for sort of these scarce and rare digital items. And the same can, now any artist, whether this is in the form of music or in the form of art or sort of even writings, can be published in such a manner. Okay, and I think the royalties afterwards that you get means that even in the aftermarket, you continue to get benefits for it, the original creator.
So you said before that Animoca Brands is delivering property rights to digital assets.
Correct.
And we talked about non-fungible tokens.
Yes.
I just want to know, how did non-fungible tokens come about? It's not your thing, is it?
No. So we didn't invent NFTs. So NFTs broadly, although it has existed in one form or another earlier, really NFTs sort of came into the mainstream, sort of let's call it early stream, in late 2018 in one of our portfolio companies called Dapper Labs. And they created this little sensation called CryptoKitties. And CryptoKitties is basically a breeding game where people can own these two cats and breed another digital cat, and then they can sell it and trade it and breed more cats. And the only reason you would actually have these digital cats is because each cat was unique and scarce with different attributes, different colors, and through a combination of AI and programming, you knew that every cat was different from the other, right? That was it. When it first launched, it wasn't supposed to be a sensation. It was more like kind of be interesting to use blockchain technology to introduce scarcity as opposed to sort of what's happening with the sort of tokens at that time. And it just was a sensation, like, tens of millions of cats were sold and traded in the aftermarket. And it brought at the time Ethereum on its knees. That same company, by the way, is the company that ended up launching a blockchain called Flow to address the challenges they had with CryptoKitties, and launched one of the biggest NFT sensations in recent times called NBA Top Shot, where people were trading these NBA collectibles. And I think just last month, we're doing like $230 million in terms of trades of these collectibles, becoming probably the fastest growing marketplace in history.
But if it's digital yet, you just mentioned NBA Top Shot, why can't I just copy it?
Because of the fact that it's an NFT, the blockchain. The blockchain certifies its origin, its originality, and its scarcity. Now, I think, there's often people say, but it's just an image. It's just a picture. It's just a video. I can just see that many times. Sure. I mean, you can get a picture of a Mona Lisa on your phone. That's fine. Sure. You can download it and you can enjoy it that way. But it's not the original, right? Nobody's going to say, the original Mona Lisa is not worthless because I can print it out. Right? And that's exactly what's happening here. The way to look at a non-fungible token is that it's a contract. And that contract validates the origin and originality of it, right? When you buy art, you get serializations, and artists might say, I'm making one of 10 and I put my autograph on it. That gives it that origin as well. In Hong Kong, I remember when I first came to Hong Kong, fake Rolexes were a thing. I never bought one because I wasn't into watches. I don't actually wear watches, but fake Rolexes was a big thing. And I sort of look at that and say, well, why would you want a fake Rolex anyway? But people want that because of the status it might apparently convey on them, but they never go out and say, I have a fake Rolex. Isn't that cool, right? They do that because they want people to believe that they might have a real one, right?
Yeah.
And the thing about a blockchain is that the fact that it is real is instantly visible because it's a non-fungible token. The digital print will tell you right away if it's a fake or if it's real. And that matters a lot.
Okay, so Yat, you talked right at the start of this conversation that back in the day, you were sort of, I guess, ahead of the curve, 1993, setting up a company which is ahead of the curve, selling your next company in 1998 to IBM. So looking forward into the future, NFTs, you think, is going to become a very large space to look at, And what I'm looking, what I'm interested in, as are all of our listeners, is tell us about Animoca Brands as an investment, because you were listed on the ASX in 2020. You are not listed on the ASX anymore, but you say, or I'm probably putting words in your mouth, but let's go with this. It's a good investment because Animoca Brands are at the forefront of the NFT revolution.
Yes. So let me just quickly dial back a little bit as to where we think we are, because I think that sort of informs on our thesis anyway, and why we believe non-fungible tokens, we think, is going to be a multi-trillion dollar industry. We think NFTs are going to completely change the way we live and work and play. That's actually our sort of our stated mission. The thing about
but what's the sorry to interrupt you again. Well, first of all, my apologies to our listeners. Somebody is drilling outside my window, which is very annoying. So right. I apologize. But the current size of NFTs as we sit here today in early 2021.
So the current size of NFTs in early 2021 probably has hit at this point, I would estimate, $1 billion, primarily because of all the growth we've seen.
$1 billion?
$1 billion.
Okay.
In terms of probably the sort of market size of all of NFT, it's still small. And let me explain, but maybe I need to dial back a bit and sort of go back a little bit into sort of pieces here. Because we see this moment with NFTs similarly to sort of early internet, you know, when eBay and Amazon were just coming about. That's the way we see the industry roughly at that time, right? Wow. So in other words, if you were looking at it from an investment perspective, not specifically just us, but generally looking at NFTs or NFT companies, that's how early that space is. And that's the growth potential. But we think it's going to accelerate faster because of the fact that we're all digital. One of the reasons why sort of Amazon and eBay grew is because of internet adoption. But one of the problems that internet adoption had was it required physical connections still. You needed broadband, you needed a cable, you needed all these things that we don't need to have today because we're all already digital connected. One of the reasons why smartphone adoption actually accelerated way, way faster is because of the fact that we had 3G and eventually 4G, right? And Wi-Fi. So the access part was faster. So mobile phone acceleration grew faster. And we're seeing now with blockchain and non-fungible tokens, that acceleration that happened just in the last 3 months accelerated way, way faster, precisely because many of the combinations of access and speed and everything are already there. And so it was just more like the ingredients that needs to be put in, and non-fungible tokens we think is that. Now, going into why we think it's going to explode. We play in the video game space originally as a game company. The game industry is $150 billion today, of which, by estimate of BNP Paribas, their research arm, $100 billion was spent on virtual goods last year alone. Now, virtual goods would mean like your skin in Fortnite, or your gun in one game, or swords in Crazy Defense. That's a virtual good, right? So we are already spending like more money on virtual goods than we are spending on music or watching movies. That's a fact. Okay. And we have 2.7 billion of them, which is more than half of the world's internet playing those games.
2.7 billion gamers.
Right. That's right, right? So, so that's, you know, if anyone is, you know, with children of a certain age, that's what they love to do, right? And in fact, what's also interesting about video gaming is that children who play games don't stop playing games when they become adults. That's the other thing. You know, certain mediums sort of go away with age. They're sort of age restricted. Video gaming is not. And so that means that this 2.7 billion number is constantly increasing because the generation that is born keeps playing and keeps playing and keeps playing, right? And so eventually to the point where everyone is playing games, right? So we're all ultimately already in a virtual world of some sort. So that's the macro right there. But we look at this macro and say it needs a revolution because we're spending much more money than we had ever envisioned in those video game worlds in which the players own nothing. Imagine spending $100 billion in any economy that's rental only. That's great for a company that's renting. It's bad for the person who's basically constantly rental. And so we describe the digital world inadvertently has become feudal, right? We ourselves are sort of these serfs inside these digital sort of areas, and we live according to the rules of others. We don't have the freedom to do with these assets as we please because we don't own it. But you know, in the real world, if you own a car or if you own a house, you have freedom to do what you need to with it. You can add your own value to it. You can live and do whatever you want with it.
So what you're saying is the NFTs allows us to then have ownership of our digital assets, which right. means ultimately, because you know, this is what I'm all about, we are growing our wealth yes. over time.
I mean, this is the story of labor versus capital, right? Yep. And the thing here is that you're creating capital out of digital assets that actually should have capital, but the benefit only currently accrues to, you know, a small number, right? And what non-fungible tokens does is, it, you know, it's for us, we view it as a revolution. It completely liberalizes ownership. And one of the struggles is that, and why blockchain is the solution, is you need an authority that is immutable, that can guarantee that ownership and that structure. You know, when I buy a car and I say, you know what, and your car company comes back, actually, you don't own that car, just give it back to me.
Yeah.
You know, you have a recourse, right? You can go to the government, you can go to the judge, you can fight it. But in a game company, you can't do that. If the game company says, which they often do, we think you're a cheater, or, oh, you know what, we're changing the rules
because,
you know, they just cut you off. They just take it. Because they can. And, you know, 20 years ago, it was just the realm of the sort of small group of people and nobody cared. But today, you know, people are spending so many hours of their lives in this thing. It's just not right. Now, the other thing is this.
Yeah.
Just quickly, because of true digital ownership, because of property rights, other industries around have developed on our assets as well, meaning our assets can be collateralized. Right? We just recently sort of supported a company that provides loans for NFTs, right? Because there's a market for that. Because again, you have property ownership, so you can have those type of products. You know, it's not our company, but someone else will provide it. Someone else is fractionalizing them. You know, we have people playing our games, making thousands of US dollars as monthly income.
Right? Goodness me!
And their act is actually it's in some cases become their sort of almost primary sort of quasi employment, if you will. Making more money, sort of playing our games than whatever real world job they're doing. Now, this seems kind of crazy in some way, but then if you think about the amount of time that's already spent in digital assets, spending on these digital assets, you know, although you don't own anything, then actually that doesn't seem that crazy anymore, I would think, because the parallel of value increase is the same as moving from rental to ownership, right? If I rent, I spend a certain amount. If I own, I spend more because I can do more with it. And that's what's happening in the virtual goods space. So
we're running out of time yet. And look, I could talk to you. By the way, I'm probably going to call you up and talk to you some more because, ladies and gentlemen, fascinating. Yet, this is capitalism and the revolution. This is the internet going on fire. This is a complete change of open internet, open source to, you know what, I can own my own property, my own digital assets within this crazy thing we call the internet. This is revolutionary. You have a number of brands in this area. This is an investment audience. Do they invest in Animoca brands? Do they invest in the digital assets?
Right.
What do we do as investors out here? You're clearly, here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen, he's clearly really bright because he's ahead of the game all the time. I'm actually going to start looking into NFTs, but what I want to know is Animoca brands.
Yes.
So how do I, as an investor, why should I care?
Okay. So for Animoca brands, so we're not currently trading. So that means that we are still a public company.
Yep.
So what sometimes people do is they do email our sort of investor relations page and say they want to buy shares. And what we do is we connect them to people who have bought shares while we were listed and want to sell. So we'll make the connection. We don't, you know, like obviously we don't transact. We just pass them on to some people if they're interested. That's one way to do it. And then hopefully we'll be on sort of a trading platform soon so that people can trade more commonly, I would say. But the other way to do this is that, you know, take a look at the assets themselves, right? You know, if you look at our two big projects of ours, Formula One, the Formula One license partnership that we have with F1 Delta Time. You know, that's a racing, you know, you own the cars, you know, the most expensive car at the time sold for $111,000 US. It's worth way more at the moment. You know, we've sold tracks. I mean, cars, you know, have risen in value 16 to 20 times since they purchased them from less than a year ago. And that's partially sort of the market. It's not that we intended for the prices to increase. It's because more people ended up playing the games and buying these assets. And because it was only a certain supply, the demand ended up just increasing them. So,
and your company takes a cut of whatever that.
Yeah, so the transactions, we take a cut. That's correct, right? Yeah. But the point being is that, you know, the ownership of these cars are predominantly with the players themselves. So when you're trading and buying them, you're trading and buying them from somewhere else. So it's quite decentralized that way. You know, Sandbox, which is virtual land, and developing on top. So it's very similar to Roblox or Minecraft, but on the blockchain. You can basically develop your own virtual land, and people have done that. And that's actually one of our sort of, I guess, hottest NFT projects. Just the other day, in the space of 5 minutes, we sold $3 million worth of virtual land. And you know, and the scarcity and the demand functions very similarly, because people want to buy land close to where the famous guys are, right?
It's okay yet, because you're talking to Australians. We're obsessed with property. Ladies and gentlemen, you can't get property in Australia. That's okay. Just go to Animoca Brands and get into Sandbox and buy it virtually.
Right. So that's one way. I mean, the other thing is, I'm not sure if it's available in Australia, but you know, NBA Top Shot, which is one of our portfolios, you know, people are trading digital collectible cards. That's probably the biggest one in terms of the NFT space right now. I think last month it was something like $230 million of these NBA moments being traded. So it's really quite explosive, the space. And I think what you're seeing here is, to your point, it's a capital revolution, and people are understanding what actually have ownership. There's a whole bunch of things I could be doing that I wasn't able to do before, and you know, we're still early. At the end of the day, there's 2.7 billion people that we still want to onboard, right? There's $100 billion of assets that were spent last year, of which almost all of it is in rental. Now, here's the other thing, maybe as a closing note to think about. In the video gaming space, the traditional video gaming free-to-play space, that revenue comes from a conversion rate of less than 1.5% on average today. You know, if you play a mobile game, chances are you never pay anything, right? Only a small number pay.
Right? Yeah.
And that drives that revenue that the gaming industry has today. And what we believe is that when you deliver ownership, that conversion rate will go up from 1.5 to 2%, not to just another 1 or 2%, but to like 10 or 20%. As we have seen in the real world, right? You know, rental economies have low conversion, but property ownership have high conversions. And so we think of this $1 trillion opportunity.
We are so running out of time. I'm going to let you have the last word, but I'm just going to say one thing, ladies and gentlemen. In 2019, because Yap just said last year, $100 billion in virtual goods were sold. In 2019, it was 50. So it's doubled in 12 months, which is crazy time. So we're talking NFTs, we're talking explosion. There's much more we can talk about yet. Oh my goodness me. Last word goes to you. To this investor audience, what would you say to them to close this interview?
I would encourage you to very seriously research anything related to non-fungible tokens, NFTs. Certainly, you know, you don't have to look at our projects only. This space is early, but sort of outside of, you know, our project Sandbox, F1 Delta Time, there's also our portfolios like NBA Top Shot, or Axie Infinity, also a portfolio, or a variety of other very cool things. If you love art, take a look at OpenSea, which is a marketplace. It's also a portfolio. So as a company, you know, we've really sort of invested heavily in the space to build it up. And we encourage you to at least study this space. Non-fungible tokens is going to change everyone's lives, we think.
And ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first. Sandbox, you can't buy your own. Buy it virtually through Animoca Brands. Yatsu, thank you so much for talking to us today. I want you back soon, because there's so much more we can talk about. Thanks for joining us on Small Caps.
Thank you so much.